Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter presented by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, PFP, and on the other line is Jim Ozarski, Milwaukee Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm good. Watching the snow fall yet again and hoping I can get to Cleveland for this back-to-back without issue.
I would not plan on that personally. I feel like that's a long shot at this point, but even if you get there, you're going to freeze. I mean, you're on a lake there too. It's going to be so cold. Oh, I hate winter. I hate it. I hate winter. But at least there's a little bit of basketball to keep us somewhat warm. And although, man, halfway through this week, I thought this was going to be a like total couch session where you talk us off the ledge, the Milwaukee Bucks dropping those back-to-back games against perceivably lesser teams. You know, Charlotte's okay. New Orleans has some star power, but like obviously the not desirable, especially Eric Bledsoe having a nice game for New Orleans. It looked like the Bucks were kind of in a little bit of a spiral. Then they come out and they beat Indiana and or I should say Portland first, then Indiana, and they do so handily. Absolute blowouts at Pfizer Forum. You know, I'd opened up the standings shortly before that Portland game and noticed that it kind of confirmed what I felt about this Bucks team. At that point in time, there were no teams with winning records that the Bucks had beaten, except for one, the Golden State Warriors, back on Christmas, you know, before the Warriors were even, like, kind of figured out. So there's no resume wins for the Bucks. Obviously, that doesn't really matter, but still, it felt like they were beating up on lesser teams or teams that have really struggled this year, like Dallas and Miami, and they hadn't found it. They don't seem great against good teams. Then they go out and beat back-to-back great teams with resounding performances. Starting with those games, what's sustainable there? Are those just two outlier games? We shouldn't even get excited about them? Or is this the pivot point? Is this where they're turning the corner that maybe they found something? They're going to go on the road here and they can carry it over. Like how should I feel as a Bucks fan after those two games?
Well, I think you need to feel good at the fact that they had lost two in a row, 4 of 6.
Ugly.
And they were unhappy about it, but not just saying that they were upset, but then going out and just putting a beat down on those teams. I mean, it was Giannis didn't play in the fourth quarter of either game.
No, he's working on his photography. It's good stuff.
Yeah, so and you don't do that by not marrying up, you know, defense and offense. And you know, you saw Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis get out a little further on switches on pick and rolls, right? And Mike Budenholzer kind of jokes after the Indiana game where he says about Jrue Holiday, yeah, you know, the scouting report's kind of just, okay, you go take that guy. And when does Mike Budenholzer kind of make jokes like that, right, regarding defense?
Right.
So I think that's what you could take. Now we'll find out if it's a true pivot point, right? This 2 week road trip, you know, Colin Sexton is going to play for Cleveland. I believe he missed, you know, those guys, missed the first game at Fiserv. So we'll see. But I think that's a good takeaway is that they showed that they're a good squad that can react properly to a bad stretch as opposed to splintering apart, or, you know, but it's still kind of hurry up and wait though, JR. I think with like the long-term stuff is just, you know, can they maintain it? Can they win a 6-7 in a row? Like we think they probably should a couple times this year. Yeah.
You had mentioned, I think last week, when early ends, you know, like what's people's perception of early, especially in a season that's a little bit abbreviated. I'm curious, Ken, I guess to throw it back to you, where you, like, at what point in the season are you going to say, okay, the Bucks have been playing middling 500 basketball, and it's two-thirds of the way through the season, halfway through the season, we should be concerned? Because I actually think there is some wisdom to saying you can go all the way up to basically the last throws of the season, the final stretch, because this team has always been focused to that. They're going to try to hit that, you know, the crescendo at the end of the year. So tinkering, they could tinker all year long, and that would just be fine as long as they're a playoff team. They're still tied for second in the East. It's so easy to lose sight of that. There are no dominant teams in the East, maybe Philly, but for the most part, they're 100% still a playoff team, as we know. So what's the point where you're going to say, look, the Bucks need to be good by now by this point in the schedule?
Man, that is a great question. I mean, I think this is going to be, this is going to sound so weird. So I'm going to reference a bench player, but Torrey Craig.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, his, him finally playing when it matters, that's only started the last four games. So to me, it's almost like a defensive reset had to happen just a few games ago. And I think that's also why maybe we saw such confusions up top and some open looks and threes. And so I feel like their early is still yet to come, because I just, you know, Jordan Orr and Sam Merrill are finally gone. They're in the G League. Like, it's like they finally settled on the roster and the rotations, or who should play. I think they're still figuring out who. So I'm taking this time. I'm clearly smart listeners know. I'm talking while I'm thinking. Because
you don't have an answer. Yes.
And JR, I'm looking at the schedule, and don't you think – I can't say the first half. I want to say the back-to-back – well, they're not back-to-back, but the two games in three nights against Toronto, February 16th, 18th. I'm going to put it there, because you've come out of this 4 out of 6 losing strip with two wins. Now you're going to go on the road. 2 in Cleveland, the mountain trip, Denver, Phoenix, Utah, tough. Oklahoma City. 2 games against the Raptors, who are pesky. Whatever their record is going to be at that point, they're going to give the Bucks all they can handle. So to me, I think February 18th, that's where you would want to feel the team has their identity. Now, I don't know. I'm not saying they got to win all those games. I'm not saying they got to go 500. This goes back, JR, reminds me to our first podcast, where it was like, not so much the result, but what does it look like? You know, you can lose on a bank 3-pointer over Giannis in the opener, right? And still, like, it, yeah, they lost, but you could look at what actually happened to get there. So I'm going to put a pin in it, listeners, hashtag PFP. Thursday, February 18th, I kind of want to know where they're at, what they look like. I feel that's when early is done. And they've played enough teams that are good in home and away. I don't know. I don't know. I feel that's fair, too, because that's 30 games into the season.
Absolutely. And I think you kind of alluded maybe at the beginning there about the three-point shots that have been falling. The defense hasn't been able to stop that. And the Bucks have never stopped that. Even at their best the last 2 years, teams were shooting a high volume of threes and making a high volume of threes against them. That is something they conceded. It is part of their defensive fabric to let that go. Lower efficiency shots, the Bucks were letting that go. Sometimes it burned them. More often than not, of course, it did not. I don't know if we chalk that up to just the fact that teams are overall just shooting better here without fans in the stadiums, or it's just a bad run of luck or whatever. But do you think the Bucks will ever get to a point where they're going to defend the three better? And moreover, I guess the part of that is, do they want to? Do they care? Is that important to them? And if not, how are is it concerning that has bitten them more often than not this year?
Yeah, they've so they tied their own record by allowing 3 consecutive opponents to hit 23s on 3 straight nights. They did that last year in the bubble, right when they got there, and you know, a 1-2 stretch here. Utah, hit a franchise record 25 threes. LA hit 19 and shot over 50%. I think they are going to defend the three better, JR. I think that's where I'm looking at these next 10 days, because I feel like the players have spoken. I feel Bud is listening to them, and that means the switching up top, being better at that. Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis kind of having a better idea of how far they need to get out, and you know, being comfortable with that. And then the other guys understanding, okay, well, if there is going to be a switch, or if there's going to be show, well, Brook Lopez is at the top of the 3-point line now. How does this handle on the back end? Like, I think it's just one of those things where when, you know, fans called for these changes, right, JR? Like on Twitter or whatever for a couple years. So now they're trying to do it. There was no way it was going to be seamless, right? There was just no way. And so it hasn't been. And I think, you know, I think they are going to get better at it. They were better at it against Portland and Indiana. I think, again, the teams they're playing, the players they're playing over this next this month will prove me right or wrong there. But I do think they have the talent to do it. It was just more making it happen. So, yeah, I honestly, I think another team will hit 23s on them again because another team might shoot 55 to 60. Like, you know, but I do think they'll be better at it, and especially come crunch time in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's easy. It's kind of easy to forget the Jazz when they hit all those threes. I mean, they kind of ran away from the Bucks, but as disappointing as these losses have been, because we're used to the Bucks winning all of these games, they've all, I mean, like, the Pelicans were killing them, and then the Bucks roared back and made that absolutely a game at the very end. I mean, Charlotte did kind of run away from them a little bit at the end, but they've been in a lot of these games, Brooklyn and L.A., the other two recent examples, where they were in it up until the very end. And like you pointed to, that three-game stretch, Nuggets, Suns, Jazz, three very good teams from the Western Conference, I think that's going to tell us a lot about how this team has improved from the early stretch of the season. Let's revert back a little bit to Torrey Craig and his cohorts on the bench. You've brought up before that when this team's bench scores, they win. I mean, that's been borne out. When the bench has a good night, it seems like the Bucks win way more often than not. And likewise, when they have an off night, they don't win. So that's seemingly a key. You could probably argue the same thing for a lot of teams. But it's sort of an interesting topic. One of the things I think Bucks are coming around to is that when you get to the playoffs, having a good bench only takes you so far. It doesn't serve you as well as, you know, it does in the regular season. They've run into that the last couple of years. The whole idea now is get your best five, your starters, in position to be capable of winning a seven-game series against some of the best teams in the league, which no reason to think they're not headed in that direction. But if the bench is something you need to win games in the regular season, I would think that that is something to be worried about, that in the postseason, you're not supposed to need your bench. You're not supposed to be relying on, you know, your seventh, eighth, ninth guy to get you through. Should that be a concern? I mean, I think philosophically speaking, they're still going to rely on their five guys when the going gets tough. But I don't know. Does that strike you as a red flag, or am I just overthinking it?
I think it's a red flag for the regular season that if they're not scoring, the team hasn't won yet. You know, I think, what is it, in wins, it's over 44 a game, 45 a game, and losses, it's 22.
Yeah, it's pretty
like
stark.
You'd think, and some of that is in those losses, the starters played more minutes. So you're like, wait a minute. Like, if the starters are playing more minutes and they're losing, like, I get that. So I think it's interesting, JR, because I think you need the bench to score and to be leaned on in the regular season, so that when they play eight, so when Bryn Forbes plays 9 minutes in game five of the Eastern Conference Finals, he hits three threes. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what that is. And he'll play more. And Bryn's probably a bad example because he'll play more than that. But, you know, so I think yes, like, it's concerning, but also, a lot of this, I think we'll look back if JR, if they made the finals or they win the finals, we're going to look back at a lot of these podcasts and say, you know, they did the right thing. The plan worked. The growing pains resulted in, you know, I don't know, a 7-footer that could win MVP, like, and not just an awkward, gangly, you know, team that needs more time to develop. So, I think they need to figure out the scoring disparity. Like, it can't be one or the other. That's too volatile. They need to smooth that out. But I don't know if it's, I guess we'll have to see, you know, again in May, June. It's such an interesting thing, man. Right, JR? Like, everything we talk about is like this, it's geared towards something that seems so far away. Yet they have to do this. They have to figure it out now, right? In order for that thing that's so far away to even still matter.
Yeah, and I guess kind of along the same lines, Bucks have been very consistent with their starting lineup. You know, it's been Giannis, Chris Middleton, Jrue Holiday, Brook Lopez, Dante for the entire year. With I think the only exception is one game that Giannis missed and Bobby Portis subbed in. Bobby Portis, very fun player, and it's fun to have watched him succeed as he has thus far. Coming off of the bench, he's getting, you know, more than 20 minutes a game. He's very much involved. His numbers are quite a bit better than Brook Lopez's at this point. And obviously we know Brook Lopez is in the latter, you know, certainly the latter third of his career. Venture to guess latter quarter, or maybe even closer to the end. Is Bobby Portis going to be starting over Brook Lopez at some point during this season?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think we're going to get to a point where we see maybe not a consistent. I don't know if he starts. I think Mike Budenholzer would give Brook Lopez every start. Maybe the question becomes, do the minutes even out? I mean, Lopez is averaging 27 minutes. Portis is 21. And maybe it becomes more matchup based. And that's what I'm curious to see. Like, maybe are there going to be games where Giannis is the five, quote unquote, and Portis is the four? Because I will say this. I mean, you know, Bobby Portis has been kind of microwave-ish, right? Coming off the bench, 11.5, 7.5. He's had double doubles. But he's also one of the guys who gets kind of lost defensively, you know? Over helping, not helping, not dropping back, or not understanding when to do. Whereas Lopez, if you get him, it's usually a physical thing, right? Like, he didn't go all the way out on the three because he's 280 pounds and can't get there. Or, you know, maybe he came out too far and someone got around him to lay it up. But clearly he can still block shots and knows how to, you know, kind of defend at the rim without being called for a foul. So, but maybe, you know, when teams go small, it's Bobby Portis plays 24 minutes and Brook plays 23. And Giannis is the one who's the rim protector, right? I think that's what we see. I don't think Brook's going to get, like, benched or not start unless his back or feet kind of prevent it. I don't know. That's kind of my gut there, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously, if we're talking about numbers, that you know, belies the defense that Brook Lopez brings to the table. He's not here to light it up for, you know, to score 15, 20 points a game. He's here for his defense as much as, you know, an occasional outside threat, occasional inside threat. So yeah, he's probably the main guy there. But, yeah, I didn't know if Brook's shooting percentage fell off a little bit, if they decided that Bobby is the guy. But I agree with you. It's probably more about matchups and whatnot. Moving to the Giannis corner of the podcast, always talking a little bit about Giannis. I'm looking at his stats and I feel miserable for having ever suggested that he was having a down year or a disappointing year. I'm sure there are people who still feel that way. Again, pointing toward what's going to happen in the postseason. But 27 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal and a block a game. He's obviously had a few good games. Hasn't shot the ball from three the last couple games. Mike Budenholzer suggested that is not by edict. It was just organic. That's how it happened. But you look at the shot chart and you see all of the shots in the paint. It kind of is hard to feel like that happened purely by accident. And maybe it did. Two games isn't a trend. But as far as reeling back the long distance shooting or the jump shot, I mean, I feel like at some point, don't they got to give up on it? I mean, you can't because of what you talked about last week. If you can get Anthony Davis to jump out, you got to respect it to a degree. But I did find it interesting that the last couple games, at least, he's been really focused on inside, let other guys handle the outside part.
Yeah, I think some of that was, you know, Portland was and has been terrible defensively, and they didn't have, I mean, Enes Kanter, I think you might be able to dribble around Enes Kanter. I mean, he's just slow, you know. And where I'm going with that is, for as good as Miles Turner is, Miles Turner was playing with an injured shoulder and a broken hand.
He was hurt.
And Giannis, I thought, was very smart in the way he attacked Turner in getting to the paint against Indiana. There was really very few kind of head up posts. It was Giannis sort of bursting to the rim before Turner could get, you know, himself in I guess, shot blocking mode. And Sabonis isn't that guy. So it's a long way to say, I think the rim was there for Giannis these last two games. Whereas, you know, in previous games, they had done better job at making the wall and getting around. So no, yeah, I don't think, first of all, at this stage in his career and who he is, no coach is telling Giannis what to do, right? Like I don't think Mike Budenholzer is going to say, don't shoot any threes. Like, what? I mean, that's just not, because he's not taking bad threes. It's not like he's like turn around, fade away, you know, just awful shots. Like, he's taking open shots in kind of the rhythm of the offense. So, I think maybe the difference is, though, kind of like you said, JR, it's rather than maybe taking that open three that was there these last couple of games, he elected to kind of dribble in and see, okay, you know, can I get to the rim? And then, but again, I do agree that it was probably organic in that way. Like, it was just it opened and gave him that option, as opposed to he's bringing the ball up. I'm thinking about, you know, the game against Brooklyn, where he helped kind of spark the comeback with a couple pull-up threes, where he walked it up and saw what DeAndre Jordan and what they were setting up, and he pulled up and hit a couple threes. And then, you know what I mean? So I think, I still believe he can't give it up. But if it changes where he is just making more confident and comfortable decisions on when to take them or when not to, I think that's going to be a good thing for the Bucks also.
How do you feel about him overall? Do you think he's kind of shaken off whatever struggles it was to get back into the groove here with the new look team, the new look offense, defense? Yeah, he's up to 27 points a game again, which is not close to 30 like he was last year, but it's obviously not far off the pace, and there does seem to be more of an egalitarian approach this year, with more, you know, more from Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton than you know, focusing on Giannis. Do you feel like, though, he's getting close to looking his best?
He's getting there. I mean, we had an interesting post game with him, you know, where, you know, our friend Eric Name over at The Athletic asked him like straight up, hey, asked you a couple weeks ago if you were comfortable. You kind of said, no, are you comfortable? And Giannis was like, well, now I'm paraphrasing here, and I know Giannis hates that, but it was sort of saying, no, not quite there yet. And he said there's still a process to be made and to be had. So I'll go with him. If he feels there's still more to be had, or him having a better idea of what each game presents. But yeah, I think, his third triple-double, he had it by the third quarter. He knocked on the door of a triple-double as well the game before. So before, you know, the blowout, and he had to sit. So I think, statistically, it looks that way. And yeah, I think going forward, JR, playing these better teams, what is that? How does he play? What does that show? But it's I mean, look, he's good. He's good. So it's a little bit like the Aaron Rodgers discussion, right? Where like the bar is so high that when it doesn't look a certain way, you're like, okay, we know that isn't totally right. So you just kind of got to go with what they say. And if he says he's not quite there yet, I'll believe him. But to me, it does look like the last few games, even the last one in Charlotte, to be honest, after Budenholzer kind of sat him down in New Orleans, pretty much since that moment, he's looked smoother. And we'll see how that continues.
Here's another guy that we haven't talked about much, and I feel like we're simultaneously taking him for granted and just completely underappreciating his greatness. That's Chris Middleton, who, as good as he was last year, his numbers are better. He's shooting 52% from the field. He's shooting 46% from three-point range. His free throw shooting is at 93%. Those are all improvements upon last year. His raw scoring slightly down from where he was last year, but way more assists, more rebounds. just a wild, like I said, wild that we have taken him for granted. I mean, he is a bona fide star. He's going to be an NBA All-Star. He's on his way to all NBA status, and we sort of take it for granted. I'm just not used to seeing players getting better at age 29 and into, you know, into their 30s. But I think that's what we're seeing here. And I mean, we haven't talked a lot about, does Giannis have a clear cut number two? I think because as far as a national perspective, because I think Giannis's struggles have lended themselves to discussion, but like Chris Middleton's a clear cut number two. And we knew this last year, but we really know it this year. He's on fire.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's impressive. You mentioned the numbers, and it's kind of what's amazing. I mean, he's averaging almost a shot less per game this year than he took last year. It's kind of going back to his field goal attempts from his first All-Star campaign, that Eastern Conference final run, under 15 shot attempts per game. And yet, you know, the scoring is right there. Obviously, the assists are way up. It is a rare thing for an almost 30-year-old, 9-year vet to get better. I think he's benefiting from, just like Giannis, the change in offense, the fact that there are more shooters, you know, where now they can assist on a made three, you know, as opposed to counting on a basket, you know, a layup or a mid-range. It is. And it's funny because there'll be times, JR, where, like, he's out there and, you know, I'm kind of going to play by play and you're watching, and then he finally makes a couple baskets. You're like, oh, it went like 5 minutes and he didn't take a shot. And then all of a sudden he's got 8 points. Right. And then it's crazy. Like, to me, that's just, I'm trying to think of who it reminds me of. Like, it's such a quiet is just the best word. I mean, maybe, and I don't know, maybe I'm going to drive Bucks fans crazy with this, but let me see what you think. Remember, and this might take some memory because it was a small fraction of time, but do you remember when Jabari Parker was healthy? You know, and the reason I bring it up is here was a guy who, like, he wasn't, like, totally dunking on your head, you know, 6'8", Chris Middleton's 6'7", 6'8", like, kind of smooth, athletic enough, and then you're like, oh, the game's over, and it's 27-5, and you're like, when did that happen? And I just feel like Middleton's in that spot of, like, you know, 27-6, 28-6, and you're like, when did that happen? When did he score 20? I don't know. It's fascinating. He is very good. And I'm not saying that to diminish what he's doing. I think it's just Giannis is the show, the star, the highlight. And then Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday are like, you know, where did the 40 points come from? It's just, it's a really good complimentary group here, JR. I mean, I think John Horst found the right guy in Jrue Holiday to be the third man, if you will. And Chris Middleton is clearly, you know, I guess we'll see how they pick these all-star teams. I don't really know how that's going to work for the bench players, you know, but you can't argue at this point. I mean, he's in the list. He's on the list. It's just crazy. It's just, I don't know, maybe he's got to hit a couple game winners to get a little more attention.
I think it fits his personality too. Similar to Jabari, you know, they're just not loud guys. They're not on the floor calling attention to themselves. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They're not, you know, they're not making, right. They're not physical fouls. They're not, you know, trash talking. They're not, of course, Chris Middleton occasionally argues his case with refs or whatever, but he's just not loud. Even his voice, the tenor of his voice, he's just quiet. And I think that sort of fits. There are times where he just, the confidence hits him and he's just on fire for a little while. And I think given the fact that he's a two-time All-Star, having a better year than his past 2 years, he's got to get into that All-Star game. I think it'll be really hard to keep him out. But I hear what you're saying. And the complementary design of this team with Jrue Holiday and a lot of the guys with the other additions, Bryn Forbes, DJ Augustine, and the like, I mean, that's what we were talking about. That could pay dividends down the road where we don't see it right now, but we will see it when it really matters, and it isn't gonna be a problem that they don't have Malcolm Brogdon or Bogdan Bogdanovic, you know, these pieces that they could have had, because everything seems to fit together. So in a few games, you said this February 15th mark, and I think that's a really good cutoff. I think at that point we can really start to make some sweeping judgments about where this team is headed, and I mean, if they win two of those first three games, or not first three, but the three on the road trip, that West Coast portion, if they win two of three, I'm going to feel pretty good about this team again. And I already don't feel too down about them, but that's going to be a pretty good indication of where they're going, at least in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, well, first of all, Utah again, right? A team that's...
Best team in the West right now.
The top of the West. You're talking about a Phoenix team that's 11-9, has played really well. Denver 12. I mean, those are the best teams, like in a stretch that they'll have played since that Brooklyn, Los Angeles, excuse me. And so what you'd want to see is growth from that. And again, I'm not saying they need to win. It just can't be giving up 23s on 50% shooting or falling down by 28 and trying to come back against Cleveland, for instance. Like, so I think they've set some benchmarks of improvement going forward where we can maybe measure it against themselves, if that makes sense. And I think, yeah, it starts, look, Cleveland, they're 10-12, you know, they're still kind of the same team they played. They're not really great on offense. You know, defense, they've fallen off a tick. I think they were like number one when they came to Fiserv. But look, those guys, they can – these. The Cleveland team is like what the Bucks have kind of struggled with, right, JR? Like they won, but for whatever reason, it was like within 8 or 6 with like 3 minutes left, right? Like they should kind of handle that stuff. So that's what I'm curious to see is like, okay, what kind of steps have they made and against teams like that? And then a team like Utah and Denver.
Well, especially in a back-to-back setting, we're in a format that's going to mimic what's going to happen at the end of the year when you get teams multiple times in a row. That should provide the sufficient test. Jim, I gotta go outside and shovel. There's too much snowfall, and I gotta stay on top of this. So we got any last thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I mean, head over to the Mitchell. Make sure you want to get off a runway so I can want to. Snow blow out a runway so I can get out of here.
Yeah, you're gonna need a blowtorch.
Who says they
want
to go to Cleveland? I have to be the first person in the history of sports podcasts to say they want to be going to Cleveland.
You'll be the only one on that plane. You'll be the only one on that airplane, which will be nice, except when the plane is in stress and has to, you know, land in Toledo or something. That's that won't be as fun, but. That's what we're living in. So it is cool that you get a chance to go. Hopefully the weather holds off and you do in fact get a chance to see both those Bucks games in Cleveland.
Yeah, yeah, that's you know, the Brooklyn thing was kind of messed up, so glad to be making this trip. We won't be going west. That was you know, we still have print deadlines and it's just so no mountain trip for me, but you know, we'll you know, hopefully JR, we didn't touch on this. I mean, the Bucks, that those games against Toronto, I think they may have fans at Fiserv for that. You know, we can dive into that as once we know more about their plans and what's approved and whatnot. But you know, we might be able to see the Bucks live in the city of Milwaukee for the first time this year. That'll be something.
That'd be excellent.
But no, everyone, you know, if they want to come over and shovel my stairs, that'd be great.
Yeah, no one's going to do that, Jim. No one's going to do that. I can't even tell you all the I mean, whatever. I'm fat and slow and stupid, but like my back, my hamstrings, my core, like I don't even know why am I using my core muscles when I'm shoveling, but somehow because I have to lift this up over like 12-foot snow piles on the side of my driveway, everything is falling apart, Jim. I am falling apart. I'm not supposed to be feeling pain in a pandemic. I'm not doing anything, but maybe that's the problem. The shoveling has triggered muscles that haven't been used
in
9 months.
That should be the title of this. JR rediscovers his core.
Somewhere deep inside the impenetrable midsection of JR Radcliffe, there are core muscles. That is absolute news to me, but they hurt. So time to refire those up and see if I can survive my Friday. But head over to jsonline.com if you do not familiarize yourself with that, as it is lots of Bucks content there from Jim Ozarski. He's the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Going to do a little bit of traveling here and keep you updated as the Bucks head out on this 6-game road swing, coming back hopefully to 25% capacity at Pfizer Forum for a couple games against the Toronto Raptors. Jim, thank you for joining us, man. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, sounds good.
Find the Point Forward podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Love us. Shower us with your 5 stars. And we will chat with you again very soon. Ta-ta.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.